Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. Thanks for checking out this podcast from Connecting Faith. You can hear the show live each weekday at noon on Faith Radio. And there are many more podcasts for this and all our Faith Radio shows available online. Our web address is myfaithradio.com. And thanks for your gifts to this listener-supported ministry. Enjoy the podcast.
Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting Faith with Life.
Hi, welcome to the broadcast. And let me just say a happy new year to you. Neil Stavem here, Ted Ross there, Carissa's at the phones. And Ted, I guess it's, you know, we don't have to say about, you know, are you writing 2015 on your checks yet? Because who knows what checks are anymore, right?
Exactly, yeah. Putting that into your e-wallet or whatever that is.
So anyway, happy new year to you.
Thank you, but, you as well. Yeah, good to be back here.
Yes, we're looking forward to a great week of programming and got a great day today. I want to just mention that if you haven't gone to our website recently, myfaithradio.com, you'll see on there an opportunity to sign up for a new study Bible. We've got a study Bible giveaway. We've done those in the past, but haven't done it for a while. But this month, you can sign up for the David Jeremiah's new study Bible, which
nice.
Would be a great resource. So check that out. If you're new to Faith Radio, we can also send you a welcome packet. You can find out about that as well by going to myfaithradio.com and then just click on About and the welcome packet, and you can request that. I want to remind you as well that today on Live the Promise, it's the regular installment Susie Larson has with Ron Rhodes, does Bible Answers and does a lot about biblical prophecy, which sort of leads in nicely to our conversation today because our guest has a lot to say about current events and biblical prophecy and has done it in some pretty compelling ways. In fact, the book that I read over the Christmas break was, well, it didn't take me the whole break to read it, because once I started, it's like, I got to finish this. It was, you know, about 300-some pages, called The Third Target. It's the latest novel, Joel Rosenberg. I don't know, Ted, have you ever read any of Joel's stuff?
Yeah, great work. Cool. He's got a lot of it, too, right?
Oh, yeah, so he got nine novels, and his works have sold over 3 million copies. And so if you know Joel, then you know we're in for a great discussion today. Joel's a New York Times bestselling author and has written a number of novels, including nonfiction works as well. He's produced a couple of documentary films based on his nonfiction books. He's also the founder of the Joshua Fund. It's a nonprofit educational charitable organization to mobilize Christians to bless Israel and her neighbors in the name of Jesus with food, clothing, medical supplies, and other humanitarian relief. And he's a communications advisor, and he knows people that know things. And this book, obviously, is a representation of that. In fact, let me just do the setup for the book, and then we'll welcome Joel to the broadcast. But the book is called The Third Target. It's his latest novel, and the publicity says this: when New York Times foreign correspondent J.B. Collins hears rumors that an al-Qaeda splinter cell, ISIS, has captured a cache of chemical weapons inside Syria, Collins knows this is a story he must pursue at all costs. Does the commander of the jihadist faction really have the weapons, and if so, who is his intended target, the U.S., Israel, or someone else? I mean, that sounds like that could be today's headline.
Scary reality. Yeah.
Yes. Wow. So, Joel, welcome to Connecting Faith. Is this a novel or is this reality?
Well, good to be with you guys. We need to pray that this never happens.
Yeah.
But you're right. Events are moving so rapidly now that what I was thinking was a maybe 5 years down the road, a threat that could materialize, God forbid, from the Islamic State or ISIS, is now something that I think is a very dangerous possibility. Interestingly enough, just since the novel was finished, we had news reports out of Iraq that ISIS has captured an old chemical weapons facility, production facility, in Iraq, and that according to news reports, they may actually have some of the precursors or stuff, you know. So we don't know exactly what they have. We know their intent. Their intent is genocide. And the president himself warned in August, when he launched airstrikes, that we were facing genocidal conditions in Syria and Iraq. Now, we can get into here about the half measures the president has taken, given the stakes he described. But the president was right. ISIS is trying to destroy, wipe out Muslims, Christians, and if they can get to them, Jews and Israel. It's I wish this were fiction, gentlemen, and The Third Target is a novel, but the themes in it are truly ripped out of today's headlines.
Well, tell me a little bit, because you've been in the communications business and, you know, a reporter and connected with a number of world leaders, particularly in the Middle East. I'm interested in your perspective, you know, as you set this book up. It's a foreign correspondent who's kind of in the middle of all this, and he has an opportunity to make a connection with a jihadist leader. And I'm wondering, I mean, tell me a little bit about what motivates frontline reporters, and are they really willing to risk their lives to get a story with a terrorist or do something like this? Is that something that is actually happening more than we know?
Yeah. When I was in college at Syracuse University, I really wanted to be a producer for networks, produce documentary films, mainly in the Middle East, and produce news. And I spent a lot of time with reporters. And what's interesting is, yeah, there's a tribe, as it were, of foreign correspondents and journalists who this is, you know, sort of an adrenaline rush, but also they see it as important work, which is to try to get the story from the front lines and meet people that are making the news as well as the people being affected by whatever horrors are out there. Dozens and dozens, maybe it's hundreds now, of journalists have been killed in Syria trying to cover that war. There is, like I said, a tribe, as it were, they call themselves a tribe of foreign correspondents who are war correspondents. And J.B. Collins, the protagonist in this new novel, The Third Target, that's what he lives for, and he's good at it. He's very good at it, actually, having covered Iraq and Afghanistan. But when he heads into Syria to try to meet with his ISIS commander, his experience beyond what he had ever imagined.
By the way, the book, I think, officially comes out tomorrow, does it not?
That's right,
yeah.
Yes.
And we'll have some copies to give away. So if you love Joel Rosenberg's novels, you'll want to sign up for the latest. And you can do that by giving us a call at 877-93-FAITH. That's 877-933-2484. And maybe you've read some of his past books and like to just say, hey, I'd be glad to chat with you and just let him know how much you appreciate his writings and his great insights. So, Joel, are reporters like the story, and then even your perspective, is it all about connections, and is it possible to really have connections with some of these world leaders and intelligence agencies? I mean, I guess we see it on TV and read about it in other novels, but does that actually take place? Reporters are pretty well connected?
Absolutely, Neil. I mean, it depends on the quality and the experience of the reporter, but a New York Times foreign correspondent worth his salt in many ways is an intelligence operative, right? He is trying to gather information the way a CIA operative or, you know, a British intelligence operative would do. But rather than provide it to world leaders secretly, you know, a New York Times reporter or Washington Post reporter is trying to inform the world and inform world leaders publicly. It's open source reporting, but they're definitely intelligence operative in that sense, right? They're not killing people, but they're gathering information, and their stock in trade is building relationships with sources. And it's interesting, you know, world leaders and intelligence officials are sources of information, and often they want to give information to leak that out to the public so that the public debate is informed by the latest developments. And so, yeah, it's a very realistic scenario in the sense of this reporter having access to both generals and intelligence officials and world leaders, often them telling the reporter things, you know, on background or off the record, trying to shape the coverage without being quoted.
Hmm. I guess that's one of the things that we wonder about. I mean, are we really getting the real story? And you'd feel like, well, if maybe all we were reading was the Jerusalem Post or something, for example, instead of the New York Times, that we would have a completely different perspective on things. Maybe talk a little bit about that, just, you know, the way the news gets shaped so much.
Well, one of the things that's important in a free society is having multiple sources of news reporting. Right. And because, you know, OK, yes, if you only rely on the reporting of the New York Times, you know, you only have their angle of information in the purest sense, but potentially bias and slanting in terms of what they consider important. So, you know, what I do as a consumer of information is read a wide variety of different publications, even if they have a different ideological perspective on their editorial pages. The importance is getting a wide range of information, and through that, trying to sift through what's real, what's important, right? Because a lot of news, a lot of things are happening in the world that the New York Times and the Washington Post and others don't consider important, but they're very important. Consider, for example, the slaughtering of Christians all across the Middle East. There's some reports of that. You know, it's not that they don't ever cover it, but they're not covering it to the degree that I think it's important as an evangelical Christian. Moreover, millions of Muslims are turning away from Islam in recent years because of the violence done by the jihadists, and they're turning to faith in Jesus Christ. That's a story you're not going to find probably in the New York Times or other mainstream, you know, liberal news publications, but it's news. It's very important. So again, you've got to look at different sources of information and sift it through with the discernment that God gives us.
We're talking with Joel Rosenberg today, who's a New York Times best-selling author. This is novel number 9, I think, and it is just a great read, just coming out from Tyndale. It's called The Third Target, and it focuses on Syria, on Jordan, on ISIS. I mean, it's like reading the headlines. We are going to talk a little bit more about, you know, the implications of Christianity being removed from Iraq and Syria, and about is there a chance for moderate Muslims to have some sort of influence in this region. And we'll get to that and more as we talk with Joel Rosenberg. We got some copies that we'll be able to give away of his new book just coming out tomorrow. 877-933-2484 is the number, and you can sign up for that, and we'll talk more with Joel in just a minute. Stay tuned. To Connecting Faith, and we're just grateful for a little time today with Joel Rosenberg. A great way to start out the new year. It's cold all around the upper Midwest. You're looking for some good reading. His latest novel will definitely fill up your evenings, and probably, you know, if you're like me, it's not going to take very long to get that done. It's just a fast read once you get into the story. The Third Target, it's called. Joel is a best-selling author. He's written a number of novels, and his works nonfiction as well, all that sold over 3 million copies. He's also founder of the Joshua Fund. It's a nonprofit, educational, and charitable organization to mobilize Christians to bless Israel and her neighbors in the name of Jesus. He's a communications advisor, worked with some of the top U.S. and Israeli leaders, and he's been on hundreds of radio and TV and newspaper, and we're honored to have him with us today. Joel, let's talk a little bit about one of the subplots in this book. And it's certainly, you know, reality in the news as well, as the idea of perhaps a Palestinian peace agreement or a peace agreement between Israel and the Palestinians to provide a state. And talk about, you know, if that's a reality today. And obviously in the book, there was a strong reaction against that by the terrorists. So talk a little bit about that.
Well, there is, of course, a longstanding effort between the Israelis and the Palestinians and the world community to find some sort of solution to this thorny and very painful divide and source of tension. Of course, just last year, you had Hamas, the terrorist organization that controls the Gaza Strip in the south, to the south of Israel, launched more than 4,500 rockets and missiles at the civilians of Israel. So this is a conflict that needs a resolution, that needs peace. And Jesus himself said, blessed are the peacemakers. Now, I personally don't believe we're going to see real, complete peace and justice and security until the Lord Jesus comes to reign himself. I mean, I think the scriptures are clear about that. But again, blessed are the peacemakers, We're supposed to be praying for the peace of Jerusalem. We're supposed to be trying to bring quiet and reconciliation between the Israelis and Palestinians. But we have to remember that as we try to do that, there are other forces that are trying to rob, kill, and destroy. Right? There's an enemy, and there's a spiritual enemy, and there's a geopolitical enemy. ISIS, this Islamic State, they are one of the enemies of peace. So even if you got close to a peace treaty that both sides, or at least the leaders of both sides, thought was the right one, you have to remember that the closer you get to that peace treaty, the higher the likelihood that extremist radical forces are going to try to sabotage it. And that is one of the, you know, the plot lines inside this novel, The Third Target. The people have to understand that just because you have diplomats sitting in a room trying to write down a treaty that they think is a good one doesn't mean extremist forces are going to say, oh, well, okay, I guess as long as you guys have all figured it out, let's just go with that.
Is there an opportunity or chance for moderate Muslim leaders particularly to exert enough influence to stem the tide of terror? I mean, are these moderate leaders targeted themselves, I assume?
Well, it is. The first answer is yes, in the sense that we want to encourage moderate leaders inside the Islamic world, inside the Arab world, to be working against the forces of extremism, against the radical Islamic jihadists. And, you know, we're not going to find people who agree with us 100% on our issues and our values, but we can find some, and we need to work with them. I'll give you an example, would be Jordan's King Abdullah II. Very interesting. I had the opportunity in doing the research for this novel to go to Amman, Jordan. I wanted to sit with some leaders who were moderate, friendly to American, have peace with Israel, you know, and sort of and against the radical jihadists. And I wanted to get their perspective as I wrote this novel. And so I got invited to come and sit with the prime minister of Jordan, and then with the foreign minister, and then with the interior minister, and then with a prince who's a senior advisor to the king. I wasn't able to sit down with King Abdullah himself, though I read his book and I read many of his speeches. All that to say, Jordan is doing an extraordinary job. They, I think, are leading the league, as it were, in trying to fashion a stable country is trying to keep good ties with the West, peace with Israel. They don't agree with us or with Israel on every issue, you know, for sure. But King Abdullah is a player that we have worked with and can work with. And ISIS would love to kill him. There are others in the region, General, now President Sisi, in Egypt. Again, a lot of problems with him. He's an authoritarian leader. So, you know, we're not 100% with him. But he has taken a hard, firm line against Hamas, against ISIS, against the Iranian nuclear threat. I mean, this is a guy we actually can work with, even though President Obama seems to prefer not doing so, and in fact working more closely with the Muslim Brotherhood, which baffles me beyond belief, but that's probably a different topic. So, no, that's an extended DVD answer, and I apologize for that. But we ought to be looking for key moderate allies that we can work with in the region. We desperately need them.
We'll come back and talk a little bit more about Jordan as it relates to the story and current events and maybe biblical prophecy as well. But let's take a call from Marilyn, listening in from Sioux Falls. And Marilyn has a question a little bit about news sources. Marilyn, you're on with Joel Rosenberg. Go ahead.
Hi, thank you, gentlemen. Mr. Rosenberg, thank you so much for being curious and digging into this and bringing us news like you do. What are some sources that you like to access when you are reading different news sources?
Well, I appreciate it. Thanks for the kind words. One of the things I do is follow a lot of these news sources on Twitter, so I can follow an individual reporter. And I can follow world leaders. And then, you know, I do follow news from the New York Times, the Washington Post, the Wall Street Journal, AP, Reuters. I follow Israeli newspapers in English. I'm working on my Hebrew, but I'm not reading the newspapers in Hebrew yet. So the Jerusalem Post, the Times of Israel is a really excellent news website. Haaretz, Ynet, there's a whole range of them, Israel Hayom. You can go to my Twitter account, Joel C. Rosenberg, and you can kind of skim through the people that I follow. It doesn't mean I agree with all these people. I follow the Ayatollah Khamenei on Twitter. You can understand I'm not agreeing with anything he's writing, but I want to understand what he says and when he says it. So that's one way I do it. For me, I don't just rely, however, on the media. I go almost as a reporter myself, though I'm not a journalist really. I'm a novelist. I make things up, but I try to get as much information and insight as I can. So I go and I sit with the Prime Minister of Jordan. I sit with former directors of the Central Intelligence Agency and other leaders to try to get their perspective. So when I write, it's fiction, but it's as realistic as possible.
Yeah, no question about that. The Third Target is the latest novel from Joel Rosenberg, and it's fiction or is it? I think that's the question that we want to know. By the way, you can get an update on what you have, flash traffic emails, right? The joelrosenberg.com?
Right.
Yeah. So
I send that out about once a week or so, and you can also follow my blog at joelrosenberg.com. I sometimes update that, sometimes several times a day if news is moving quickly.
Which it certainly seems like it is at this.
Yeah.
I mean, which I guess is the other thing. I mean, the book really does feel like reading the headline. So is it? I mean, when you wrote it, when you end up doing a lot of projecting, obviously, but it really could have been written yesterday as opposed to months ago, whenever you actually got started.
Right. Well, when I did start, it was about 18 months ago. I knew I was going to start a new series. I wanted to do it in the first person. I'd never written a novel from one person's angle, and I thought that would be just a sort of an artistic challenge to try to do that. I wanted to write about a New York Times foreign correspondent, and I wanted to write about new threats coming up over the horizon in the Middle East that maybe no one had heard of yet. So that's why I went and I sat with two CIA directors, former Jim Woolsey, who served under President Clinton, so from a Democrat angle, and then Porter Goss, who served as CIA director under President Bush in 05, 06, I think it was, when we were fighting in Iraq, Afghanistan. And I went and met with the former head of Mossad, the Israeli intelligence system. Again, trying to understand their perspective and weave those through. And each of them were telling me, listen, this al-Qaeda in Iraq offshoot known as ISIS, these are the guys you want to watch. And they were right.
Hmm. We're going to talk.
And remember, a year ago this month, January, President Obama gave us an interview to the New Yorker magazine saying that ISIS was not a threat, that they were sort of the JV team, and that al-Qaeda was pretty much diminished and not a serious threat to America anymore. I was already in the midst of writing this novel, The Third Target, and I believed differently from my sources and instincts. And I think the president was clearly proven wrong. And now we've got genocidal conditions where people are being slaughtered, they're being beheaded, they're being crucified. Little girls, 8, 9, 10 years old, are being sold into sexual slavery. It's the most evil situation that's sweeping across Syria and Iraq, and it's coming to the United States and to Israel if we don't stop it over there.
We need to stop for just a moment, take a quick break, and come back, talk more with Joel Rosenberg about his latest novel, and we'll get into some prophetic insights as well. 877-93-FAITH if you'd like to sign up for his new book. Stay tuned.
Fix my
No, there's a day coming when Jesus will return. What happens before then has been the subject of a great deal of study and research and interest. One of those who has spent much of his life doing just that, Joel Rosenberg. son of a Jewish father and a Gentile mother. He's an evangelical Christian with a passion to make disciples of all nations and teach biblical prophecy. Graduate of Syracuse University, has a degree in filmmaking, and lives in the Washington, D.C. area, and has written best-selling novels and other nonfiction works as well that have sold over 3 million copies. And Joel Rosenberg is our guest today on Connecting Faith. We do have some copies of his new book, The Third Target, available that we'll do a drawing for to give away at the end of the hour, 877-93-FAITH. If you'd like to sign up for that and ask Joel a question or a comment, you're welcome to do that as well, 877-933-2484. So, Joel, the book is talking about ISIS, their influence in Iraq and Syria, and you know, I'm just wondering, do the policy decisions in the West dictate how ISIS and others will act? So, you know, is it better maybe to support a despot who can, you know, hold a country together, maybe without necessarily appreciating human rights like we'd like? But it does seem like there's a lot of maybe reaction to inaction in the West.
Well, look, one of the themes that I write about in, you know, many of my books is this idea of to misunderstand the nature and threat of evil is to risk being blindsided by it. Okay, so think back to, you know, Pearl Harbor. I took my sons there a few years ago because I wanted them to be there, and I wanted to instill in them this idea that if you are not paying attention to evil, it's going to hit you when you least expect it. I've taken them to various places here to New York City to see Ground Zero. Why? Because I'm trying to help my four sons understand that if you don't understand the nature and threat of evil, you're going to be blindsided by it. America was blindsided by Pearl Harbor, was blindsided by the Holocaust, it was blindsided by Al-Qaeda on 9/11, and we run the risk now, not just the Americans, but the West in general, of being blindsided by an Iranian nuclear weapon and by an ISIS attack, even a chemical weapons attack, because many are growing complacent. This war is going on so long now against radical Islam that people are like, you know, let's just be done. We're tired. And I understand that instinct. I understand that sentiment. But we have to stay focused, and we have to build alliances and strengthen alliances with countries like Israel, which is our main, most faithful ally in the world, much less the Middle East, with Jordan, which is a strong and healthy ally of ours, even though we disagree on some issues, of course. Egypt, you know, the leader of Egypt, al-Sisi, look, he's not a perfect leader. But compared to what? The guy that preceded him was the head of the Muslim Brotherhood, who called for a jihad against Christians and Jews. So, you know, for the Obama administration to treat President Sisi like he's the danger is sort of ridiculous when you put it into context with who al-Sisi removed from power, a guy who was truly a threat to our security and that of our allies. So we need Western leaders, especially American leaders, especially a president who understands the nature of threat of evil and is taking every measure to protect us and defend our freedom and our security for every American.
You have a sense that our State Department, maybe in government in general, has sort of accepted the role of religious influence in some of these conflicts. It seems like, you know, for years it's like, well, you know, it's, you know, they're kind of downplaying the role of the radical religious perspective of this.
Well, look, there's a great divide in analysis over whether Islam is the problem or whether it's radical Islam, okay? And I know people get into a big argument, you know, are all Muslims radicals? You know, my answer is no. You know, are there verses that support jihad and attacking Christians and Jews in the Quran? Yes, unfortunately there are. The good news is most Muslims don't care about those verses. They don't act on those verses. They think those verses are ridiculous, or they have some explanation why those aren't really relevant. That's good. So there is a divide. You know, the radical portion of the 1.5 billion Muslims in the world is a small percentage, but it is an important percentage, and we have to keep our eye on that. And that's why, you know, I don't think it's useful to paint with a broad brush and say Islam is the problem. I'm talking about from a geopolitical perspective. You know, in terms of Christianity, Islam is lost. It's a false religion, and we need to preach the gospel to all Muslims and give them hope that there is good news, that God does love them, and Jesus is the way, the truth, and the life. But from a perspective of national policy, we need to separate moderate Islam from radical Islam and not paint all Muslims as a danger to us, because that's not accurate and it's not helpful.
You know, there has been a pretty serious removal of Christians from places like Iraq and Syria and, you know, awful things going on there. I mean, talk a little bit about that. And I'm wondering, are there prophetic implications to those situations?
Well, you know, there are Bible prophecies that indicate things are going to get worse as we get closer to the return of Jesus. There are broad, big-picture prophecies about, you know, Jesus saying in Matthew 24 that as we get closer to his return, there'll be wars, rumors of wars, revolutions, all kinds of troubles and terrors. But then there's very specific prophecies about the rebirth of the state of Israel in the last days of history, Jews coming back to the Holy Land and rebuilding the ancient ruins in the last days of history. We've seen those prophecies come true. And then there are other prophecies that deal with specific countries and specific people. And unfortunately, much of the church, I mean, set aside the rest of the world that doesn't believe in the Bible, but even many Christians avoid studying, talking about, or teaching Bible prophecy, even though 27% of the scriptures are verses of prophecy. 27%. So that's a lot of information that God wanted to give us, both about the first coming of the Messiah and about the second coming of the Messiah, and specific prophecies about specific countries that he wants us to know about, and he wants us to understand and act upon in light of understanding the world the way he sees it. And I'm not sure if I'm answering your specific question, but just sort of that big picture on prophecy, I'm happy to narrow on, you know, get into your specific question, but the big picture is, a lot of people just don't even think about prophecy or teach it, and yet that's a problem, because we are getting closer and closer to the return of Christ, and this is information he wants us to have.
Well, you do in the book, The Third Target, which is just officially coming out tomorrow. We'll be able to send a few copies out, thanks to Tyndale House, and you can sign up for a copy of his latest, Joel Rosenberg's latest, at 877-933-2484. And Joel, you do address Jordan as, and we've kind of touched on that, as one of those moderate countries that seems to be targeted, but the Bible has some things to say about that region as well. Maybe just, you know, get a little more specific about a nation like Jordan.
Well, it's interesting. Jordan is a country that I went in that last year when I was doing research for this book. I was doing a study on prophecies about all the countries in the Middle East, but I sort of narrowed in on the territory that we call Jordan. In the Bible, it's called Ammon, Moab, Edom, and there's several other names that make up that territory that currently is the nation state of Jordan. So I did what turned out to be about an 80-page personal research project on it. I didn't expect it to be so long. It turns out there are more prophecies about what we call the country of Jordan than almost any other country except Israel. And I didn't realize that. And the short version is, it doesn't go well for the people of Jordan in the last days before Christ's return. Great and terrible judgment is coming on the leaders and the people of that country. And one of the questions I had as I began to study that is, is that something that could happen in our time? Because I have to say, as I mentioned earlier, I see King Abdullah and his colleagues, the ones that I went to meet with, actually as fairly moderate as we've been discussing. You know, I mean, in the grand scheme, is this judgment going to fall on them? Or, and this is another serious possibility, is it possible that they are not around, that their government, their moderate government, is overthrown, and something much more radical, much more, a government that really hates Israel and is trying to destroy Israel and is anti-Semitic, is that what emerges in a post-King Abdullah world? I don't know, but it's one of those things you kind of have to think through because, you know, a country that has a peace treaty with Israel doesn't seem like it's, you know, it would likely merit the type of tremendous wrath and judgment from God himself that, say, another country like Iran or Saudi Arabia might merit given past history. So it, at some point, maybe I'll publish those notes, but I will tease a little saying that there's a little bit of that in the novel, and I won't go into more yet.
You know, I think it's always we wonder how to interpret sort of current events in light of those maybe those truly cataclysmic events like the Battle of Armageddon. I mean, just go, well, this seems, you know, potentially difficult, but, you know, as we read about, you know, Armageddon and, you know, blood to the bridles or whatever, that just seems like a whole new level of violence and wrath.
Well, yes, there are one of the challenges with trying to sift through and understand end times Bible prophecy is trying to understand the time frame. And unfortunately, God, in his sovereignty, decided not to give us a lot of detail in terms of the timing. Many of these prophecies do say they will happen in the last days. So we know that they'll happen prior to the second coming of Jesus Christ. But they don't tell us whether it will come before the rapture or after, during the tribulation or before. So, you know, the important thing is to understand what the specific prophecies about countries like Egypt, Lebanon, Jordan, Iran, Iraq, Israel. You know, God does speak to the future of those countries in quite a bit of detail. So it's important to know that, to study each of those prophecies, and then not try to overreach and read every headline in the newspaper as, you know, an immediate fulfillment of a prophecy, but just to watch the trend lines and ask ourselves, are we living the life that Jesus Christ wants for us, knowing that these prophecies are going to come to pass? For me and my family, that's one of the reasons I write novels, is to get people thinking about the future of the Middle East and realizing that God has a plan and Satan has a plan. And the question is, are we going to share the gospel with the Jews and the Muslims and others in the Middle East? Are we going to strengthen the Church of Jesus Christ in the Middle East? Are we going to care for those who are facing genocidal conditions, or are we going to turn a blind eye? And of course, we know that Jesus commands us to go and make disciples of all nations, not just friendly democratic nations, but countries, but all countries, including those in the Middle East. So part of, through my writing and through our ministry called the Joshua Fund, we're trying to both draw attention to and give people practical ways to do something to be helpful to the people in the Middle East, so we're not either ignorant of those issues or aware of them but taking no effort to care for those who are suffering or care for those who have never heard the gospel. And, of course, for our persecuted Christian brothers and sisters, we need to stand with them and help them and fund them and encourage them. And that's what I'm trying to do in some small way.
If you've read any of Joel Rosenberg's novels, you know that there's always an opportunity, it seems, in all of them, that building some awareness and using biblical prophecy and sharing a clear gospel message, but in a winsome, very relevant way. And we'll see what kind of reaction Joel's gotten to that as he's sold over 3 million copies of these great books. The Third Target is the latest one that comes out officially tomorrow from Tyndale. And Joel Rosenberg is with us today on Connecting Faith. You can sign up to get a copy at 877-933-2484. We'll do a drawing, give away a few copies at 877-933-2484. More with the best-selling author Joel Rosenberg in just a moment. Seven past the hour, talking with Joel Rosenberg today, best-selling author, written nine novels, the latest, The Third Target, but you could check any of the others. In fact, there's a great series, the 12th Imam, the Tehran Initiative, the Damascus Countdown. That was a, a great series talking about what's going on in Iran, and you'll find that pretty captivating as well. He's also written some nonfiction works. Books have sold over 3 million copies. Joel also has founder of the Joshua Fund, a nonprofit educational and charitable organization to mobilize Christians to bless Israel and her neighbors in the name of Jesus. And I want to ask Joel a little bit about the reaction to, as he writes his novels, and share is always some aspect of faith and prophecy as well. But, Joel, I'm curious to know, before we go on to that, you know, the Islamic State hasn't really delivered on its promises. You know, this is the new way to run a state. And I just read a report, I think it's out of the Washington Post about a week ago, saying, you know, there's a lot of criticism about that. Is there enough maybe public opinion criticism of those that are actually suffering under the hands of ISIS that that might provide some change internally?
Well, it's hard for an individual, you know, Arab Muslim or certainly an Arab Christian living in Syria or Iraq to do anything to stop ISIS, you know, because they are the Nazis of our modern time. I mean, they are just cruel and demonic. I mean, they're just killing and slaughtering people, and again, you know, using little girls as sexual slaves. It's so horrific, and they're really engaging in genocide or the early stages of genocide. So, you know, if you're an individual person or family, there's really nothing you can do politically. But in God's sovereignty, ISIS is so evil that many Muslims are beginning to ask themselves, if ISIS is what Islam should be, in other words, the sort of jihadist version of the Quran, I don't want to be associated with that. I don't want to be a Muslim anymore. That many, many Muslims are saying that, and they're either becoming agnostics, I mean, they're leaving Islam, but they're not telling anyone what they believe yet because they're not sure, or many are coming to faith in Jesus Christ as the only Savior and Lord. And I have traveled throughout the region and have many wonderful dear pastors and Christian leader contacts who are telling me they're seeing people come to Christ. They're seeing refugees who are fleeing from ISIS coming to faith. They're seeing them wanting to talk about Jesus, and they're seeing dreams and visions. They're reading the Bible. So I'm encouraged that what man is planning for evil, Jesus Christ is turning for good, and he's bringing people into his kingdom, in, you know, even amidst this horrible, horrific, genocidal environment.
You know, in your books, you often have someone who has a solid faith and is willing to share that in a winsome, relevant way. Talk a little bit about maybe the reaction that you hear from people as they read the books and say, well, I was going along with you fine, and then, you know, this came in, or what do you hear?
Right. Well, you know, if you read through some of the Amazon reviews of my past books, my boys and I like to sit around sometimes and just read through the ones that really hate me, because <you know? laughs> sometimes they're kind of comical, and sometimes, and because they're so hyperbolic. But overall, we get a lot of emails and Twitter notes and Facebook messages saying they're really appreciative that I weave a message of hope, biblical hope, eternal hope, into these novels. You know, I try to make the book as, you know, heart pounding and adrenaline pumping as possible. So, you know, it's truly entertaining and informative, but I want it to be redeeming also. And not everybody wants that or appreciates that, but a lot do. And I got to tell you, I've met people, and I've had people write to me, who've come to faith in Jesus Christ, who have their lives changed because they were reading these and they thought, you know what, I never really took that seriously. And then they began to read the Bible, and then they began to give their lives to the Lord. And that's encouraging. But even more or let's say as encouraging, I love when I get notes from Christians who say, I gave a copy of your novel to an unsafe friend or a relative or a colleague at work or school because I wasn't quite sure how to share the gospel with them. But this novel I thought would do it. And now I'm having a conversation with them. We go out and get coffee, and we talk about the book. And that's an easy way to get into spiritual themes. And that's encouraging to me, not just when I can share my faith in Christ through the novels, but when other people are sharing their faith, you know, it's kind of interesting, you know, rather than giving someone a tract, give them a 400-page novel. But people do that. Thousands of people are doing it, and I find that fascinating and wonderful.
Well, I think probably, you know, if we're only getting our news from the, you know, from the Times or the Post or whatever, it's just it's sort of refreshing to read a novel and know that, yeah, there is a bigger spiritual, there's more actors on this stage than what we're just reading about in the newspaper, so, which is great.
Yes, I think that's critical. And I think a lot of people know that the Middle East is important, and they know they should know more about it than they do, but they get little hesitant. They know that they don't know the history or the context, but they don't really want to pick up a 900-page book of Islamic theology or Middle Eastern history. This is a high-speed, high-octane, exciting way to get into a story and learn a lot and begin to get some context for what's happening in the news, but to do it in a very entertaining, you know, and compelling way, I hope. That's my objective, at least. And the fact that they've connected, they've become bestsellers is amazing to me. You know, when you write your first novel, you just hope that your mother can find it at a bookstore within 100 miles of her house.
Sure.
You know, that's your main objective.
Sure.
And the fact that it's touched more people, I'm touched and humbled by.
When we say that Joel Rosenberg is a million seller, it doesn't mean he's got a million in a cellar. No, they've all actually, they're in circulation. So Joel, a word about how would you recommend that we pray for these uncertain times in the Middle East and the Persian Gulf and, you know, Syria and Iraq? I mean, the Christians there that are suffering so mightily, what would you recommend?
Right. Well, first, of course, the Bible tells us to pray for the peace of Jerusalem. That's the city he's chosen. That's where Jesus died and rose again. That's where Jesus is coming back to. So we need to pray for peace there. And by that means geopolitical peace, but also means the spiritual revelation that Jews and Muslims and others in the region come to understand that Jesus himself is the Prince of Peace. And so we need to be praying first for Jerusalem, for Israel. But then we also need to pray for Israel's neighbors and her enemies, right? Jesus said, love your neighbors and love your enemies. And loving them means starting by praying for the Christians who are persecuted in that region, who are running for their lives, literally, from ISIS. You know, giving to ministries like the Joshua Fund that is providing winter coats, thousands of them, to people fleeing from this. We're providing audio Bibles. So people who don't know how to read or don't have time to read because they're refugees, they can just put an MP3 in that they get free from the ministries that we give them to and listen to the New Testament in Arabic, in Kurdish. So there, we can be praying, we can be giving to ministries like the Joshua Fund, and we can be telling other people about what's happening using this book and, you know, using other resources to mobilize people. Christians need to be mobilized to make a difference. And prayer and evangelism and strengthening the local church is a critical element of that. And what we don't want to do is be silent, to do nothing, because we're going to stand before Jesus one day and we're going to be held to account. And we want to be found faithful in doing something to care for people who are suffering and caring for people who've never heard the good news that Christ loves them and died for them and is coming to get them.
Joel, is the best way to find out maybe more about your writings, your blogs, and maybe the Joshua Fund, can they just go to your website, joelrosenberg.com?
You can, yes, joelrosenberg.com. I've got a blog where I track the issues of the day there. You can find links to the Joshua Fund, links to the books, video and audio of interviews I've done on Huckabee and Hannity and Fox and others. So, yeah, it's sort of one-stop shopping, as it were. There's actually links to where you can buy the books and just some context and background on me or what we're doing if people aren't familiar.
Yeah. Joel, it's been great to visit with you. Blessings to you in this new year. And clearly this book is it's not finished. The last
no,
page.
No, it's the first series. Yeah,
the last page
reminds
us that.
A little bit of a dangling piece there at the end.
Sure. So, you know, but you don't want to wait till the next one comes out because it's a good read. The Third Target, the latest novel from Joel Rosenberg, best-selling author, and kind enough to give us a few minutes today. And wish you great opportunities for ministry and good writing here in 2015, Joel.
Thank you. I appreciate it very much, Neil. God bless you.
Joel Rosenberg with us of The Third Target. It's coming out from Tyndale, actually tomorrow, their release date. And, again, we've got a couple of copies we'll do a drawing for to give away. If you want to find out more, you can get a copy through Joel's website and find out about his regular writing and the Joshua Fund. It's Joel Rosenberg, B-E-R-G, joelrosenberg.com. Check that out. And if you missed part of today's program, you can always catch the podcast online at myfaithradio.com and then go to the Connecting Faith show page. Thanks for listening.